Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Live special number 308, recorded Thursday, October 6th, 2016. Oculus Connect 3, the future of VR. This TWiT Live special is brought to you by Braintree. Mobile app development can be complex, but integrating your payments no longer has to be. With Braintree, your business can accept nearly every type of payment from any device with just one integration. Learn more at BraintreePayments.com/TWiT. Hello, everyone. I'm Jason Howell, and I'm here at Oculus Connect 3. It's a pretty awesome event that Facebook is throwing, obviously, because they own Oculus, and they want to get people, they want to get developers super excited about developing for the Oculus Rift and for enhancing the world of virtual reality. 2016 really seems like a year that virtual reality has stepped into the next phase, and part of this is bringing more immersion into the experience. And the way Oculus is doing this is that they're releasing their Oculus Touch controllers. Those come out in December. And so largely, this event feels like a coming out party for the Oculus Touch controller to really showcase how much that can enhance these experiences and move it into the next dimension. So let's waste no more time. Let's get right to the experiences out on the floor. I just took off an Oculus mask and I had to like readjust myself to a world where I didn't have the power of spells in the palm of my hands. I'm here standing with Chad DeZern of Insomniac Games, who your staff here let me kind of dive into Unspoken, which isn't even released yet, so I kind of feel lucky from that regard. Thanks for talking with us today.
Sure thing. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about Unspoken. You've been working on this for quite a while, but you have some kind of new additions to the game that include kind of ways of making these spells happen. And it was a very transformative kind of immersive experience, just throwing on the goggles and getting used to the controls. But tell me a little bit about these new features.
Sure thing. Well, the Unspoken is all about casting spells with your bare hands with touch controls. And at OC3, for the first time, we're showing off our new gesture spells. So now you can whip up a giant flaming skull in two hands and push it toward your opponent. I think I saw you do that as well.
It was pretty satisfying, I have to say.
Cool. You can do a guard spell and counter what your opponent's doing. You can hold your hands up and drop objects on them or summon fireworks. We really get you moving around, and we've set up the game so that you can keep your focus on your opponent. So it plays out like a real magician's duel, where your opponent casts a spell, but you can counter it with one of your gestures.
Now, I spent my time kind of locked in. I mean, more or less, it was like the demo tutorial scene. I have to imagine that the game, once it comes out, like what is the expansive kind of view of the world that you're doing all of this in? Are there a lot of different scenes that you have the ability to kind of warp to and battle in?
Yeah, that's right. The setting for the game is kind of an urban magic take on real-world Chicago. So in our world, there's this magic place that's just on the periphery of everybody's vision that you can get to as an archmage of this world. So you move to very different urban magic fighting arenas, and you take on other players in PvP magician's duels. But, you know, leading up to that, you can go in single player, you can get trained up, get really good at it before you choose an opponent and take them on.
Sure. How many people can fight each other with magic simultaneously?
We're built around a 1v1 duel. It's very much about two players squaring off right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's instrumental to this game in particular, and a large part of what we're seeing here at Oculus Connect 3, is the kind of the inclusion of kind of being able to finally use your hands. I mean, how is it building around these controllers?
It's been fun. We knew we wanted to make a game about Magic from the first day we got the controllers in our hands. It just makes so much sense to map, like, what we all imagine is spell casting with our fingers mm-hmm. and hands to this control scheme. We also love the ability to just grab a thing. You know, you can think of something that you do in the real world, and it pretty much works with touch controls. There's a really nice button that's on the grip that just lets you grab stuff. You know, it's got triggers that feel really natural to use. You can do things like point or swipe. Like, all of these things that you just kind of do when we prompt you without even thinking about buttons become viable in the world.
Right. Now, and obviously there are other solutions out there. You know, HTC Vive, for instance, has its own kind of hand control mechanism. Have you played around with some of the others? How does this compare to the others?
We've played around with others, and there are a lot of great products for sure. We do like the touch controls because of the precision of the tracking and because of the way they map to. Well, I'm in this VR world looking down and seeing this approximation of my real hands. And, you know, when you lift your thumb off the button, you see that happen. And it's hard to explain the experience to people who've never done it, but it's pretty transformative, pretty amazing to look down and you kind of know what you're going to get with your hands manipulating that interactive space. It really does feel like a new thing.
Yeah, like, I've had a lot of experience primarily because it's the most accessible way of doing VR right now, with mobile VR, Gear VR, that sort of stuff. Of course, Google just announced or showed off its Daydream View VR, which adds the touch controller. But, I mean, this really takes it to another level to have both of the hands in the experience. I almost couldn't imagine playing this game with just a controller in your hands, because it really it takes you to that next level.
Cool. We definitely designed this from the ground up for touch controls. We had prototypes in our hands the first day we started prototyping, so we've taken advantage of a lot of what it can do and really try to make the game a lot about focusing on your opponent, really knowing what the other person is doing with their hands in a way that we would not have been able to achieve with any other control scheme.
So today you had a couple of announcements for the game itself, for people who are very excited to kind of get in on the fun with Unspoken. What were those announcements?
The two big announcements were we announced our launch date, which is December 6th, the day in with the touch controllers. And we also announced, this is really cool for us, that the game is bundled, the Unspoken's bundled with touch control pre-orders. So you get it for buying the controllers, and you can jump right into a Magician's Duel.
So basically, if you're planning on getting the touch controllers, you're going to have access, at least at launch, to Unspoken. And you're going to realize what it's like to cast spells and be a pretty kick-butt wizard in the process.
Awesome. That's what we want. Thanks.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you're pretty successful with that. Chad DeZern with Insomniac Games, thanks for taking the time to talk with us and to allow me to be a wizard today.
Sure thing. Thanks a lot for checking it out.
All right, I'm not joking when I say that I ended the demo of Superhot. By the way, I'm standing here with Piotr with Superhot. I ended the demo with your game, pretty awesome game, a few minutes ago. My heart is still kind of racing, which I think speaks to both the kind of dynamics of the gameplay and just the immersive quality of virtual reality in general. First of all, congratulations on making such an immersive game.
Thank you. Thank you. A lot of it boils down to how you play it, because like in Superhot, time moves only when you move. So when you are playing really slowly, it's a slow game. Like the events are fast. It's a shootout, right? You grab a gun from the air, you throw a gun at the enemy. Well, you shoot, you punch enemies. But if you do it slowly, deliberately, it's more like a bullet ballet than like a fast-paced exercise. You can play it slowly. You chose to play it fastly.
I couldn't help it. Like, I wanted to move through the levels, and unfortunately that meant that I had to play a lot of levels over and over and over again, because you think you're seeing everything and then you realize there's a guy running at you from the side. There are certain components of it that reminded me of an old light gun game that you would find in the arcades called Police Trainer. Do you remember this game? Has anyone ever reminded you of that one?
No. We come from Poland. Like, arcades are not a big thing in Poland.
Yeah.
Our bigger inspirations were like the classic first-person shooter games, like Call of Duty, Quake, Doom, sure. Things like that. They were like a big thing on PC, and whenever VR appeared in the world, like, people, the first thought was, "Hey, I would like like to play a first-person shooter in VR, how would that feel, right? And it seemed like an obvious and easy conversion to do, but that's actually like a big thing to develop and design a new, like this big genre that has to be redesigned, right? So the first-person shooters like from the PC, that was our inspiration, how to redesign it for VR rather than the arcade experiences where you hold a gun in your hand, right? Like we're rather coming from the mouse and keyboard or gamepad experience than from the arcade holding a gun experience.
What's interesting to me about Superhot is that you were telling me before, you know, as I was playing this, that it started on the PC, let's say. It started in a very different kind of environment, and this wasn't too long, I guess it was March of this year, 2016. But when I'm playing the game in VR, it really does feel like the game was born to be in the virtual world. How did that come about? Because I mean, I have to imagine, even though it's the same game on both platforms, I mean, it plays very differently.
You know, the story is long and fun, but like back in 2013, when we started developing the game, we had a successful game prototype playable in browser, free for all the players, and like around the same time we were doing a Kickstarter campaign. There was a successful Oculus Kickstarter campaign, and like we got a lot of requests. People really liked all early Oculus DK ones, and like whenever they saw our game, we had this line: "I would love to play it in VR." So we contacted the Oculus, we worked together, and we produced some demos, showcase on the floor, like when Oculus was just first at E3 in 2014. We had a demo of Superhot back then, and the development of VR and the desktop version, PC version of Superhot, like it came in many ways simultaneously. Like we mostly focus on the PC version for the most of time, but we always had in mind like doing the VR thing, the approach to making like a first person shooter in VR. Wow, that changed a lot during this time, because when we started, like we thought that Superhot will be a seated experience, like you in your chair.
I couldn't imagine it like that after playing it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like once you try the touch controllers, you try this immersive full body VR, like with hands presence is basically extrapolated to like full body presence, right? Once you try it, you think about like the ideas of the past, like you think about like, hey, I will play this first-person shooter on a gamepad, and this will be so cool. And now you think, God, what those people were thinking, right? You start thinking like, did I say that it's going to be so awesome? Because like right now, it's quite obvious that like the gamepad experience and the VR helmet is just like a big screen for you. It's not like this is game-changing presence in the game world. And with touch controllers, it is, right? So I'm not sure if I answered that question, but
I completely follow where you're coming from, and I think the interesting kind of extension of what you're talking about is with the touch controller. Moving in order to keep action moving is a completely different idea, different concept than when moving actually involves actually moving. Like, you know, in order to keep action moving on the screen, your body has to be in motion. You control the speed of those bullets flying by. It is hard to do, right, in front of your eyes, let's say. And so it takes this kind of game experience and moves it into, I don't know, a movement experience where, I mean, I could see it's being active as opposed to being passive, let's say, which could be the case if it was just a hand controller.
You mean like active, like in a whole body sense,
yes,
right?
Absolutely. Like I said, my heart was racing while I was playing it, and I could feel myself moving. If I was to play that for a half an hour, I might break a sweat, you know, somewhere along those lines, because it's that intense.
Yes, it is an intense experience, and like VR, like as we see it, is as a place for those intense experiences. It may not be a thing that you will play like you play like computer games, like on a screen or console games. It may be not be a thing you play like that for long hours and hours, but like for those short and maximally intense experiences, VR is a place for that.
Fantastic. I love it. I really, now I think I need to get an Oculus just for this game because it was so much fun. Super hot. Pietro, thank you for talking with us. Tell people kind of when they can expect to get this in their own hands.
Yeah, so Super Hot is coming to the world, right, with the Oculus Touch controllers. At least we'll try to deliver it on the day. I hope we will, but you know how it is. It's like it's better to focus on the work and do a proper finished thing than just release half-baked things. So we believe in quality.
And it shows in the quality of your game. Pietro, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm used to stepping into virtual reality experiences and having everything be super fast moving, you know, fast, you know, bullets whizzing by, all this kind of stuff. I have a feeling that the game Luna is all about slowing life down a little bit, getting you back in touch with Earth, back in touch with reality to a certain degree. I'm here with Martin from Phenomena and his game Luna. I just spent a little bit getting lost in the world. You've got a really great game here.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So, I mean, a big part of this, obviously, I feel like this game is kind of two components. The first component is what you start off with, which is kind of like this, you know, more of like a puzzle to solve. You've got a kind of a grid of dots out in front of you, and you've got to connect the dots in a certain rhythmic sort of way.
Right.
And then that transitions. Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, so Luna's sort of about this bird who's been tricked by the owl into swallowing a piece of the moon. And in doing so, it causes it to become lost and confused. So when you first start the demo, you wake up with the bird, and the bird doesn't know where it is. So you're kind of helping to unscramble the bird's memories.
Okay.
That's the star part. And then once you unscramble the bird's memories, you use those pieces that you've unscrambled to then recreate the environment to create a familiar environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I notice also it's immersive in a visual sense, obviously, because you're kind of creating this world and you're waiting for the bird to kind of make that realization, remember that memory, let's say. So it's very visual, but it's also, you've got a lot of audio component to this as well to kind of work on the immersion. How did that get put together?
Or our sound designer, Brad Foch, we believe in having sort of everyone contribute to design from very early on in the game. So he's constantly creating prototypes and sending us videos and being involved in the design discussions about how to fully incorporate audio into the gameplay experience.
Mm-hmm. Where did this idea come from? I mean, you know, obviously, like I said at the beginning of this, so much of VR is about like taking your breath away because everything's moving so fast and putting you in almost dire scenarios and kind of shocking you that way. But this is very different. Why did you choose to go the opposite direction?
Right. Well, a lot of games are about sort of if something bad happens to you, you go and get revenge on it, or you go and fix it. But often, where you are right now is a result of all the experiences, both positive and negative, that you've had. And often what you have to do is just kind of learn to deal with the situation and kind of pick yourself back up and learn to move on. Mm-hmm. And so I think what you're doing with the bird is you're helping it sort of, it's, you know, as we've all found ourselves in a place where we've been knocked off of our feet, and you're trying to figure out, all right, well, how do I regain my bearings? How do I sort of recreate my new reality based on the position that I'm in right now?
Do we ever get to find the bird a companion throughout the course of the game?
Yes. So in each level, the bird meets a new animal creature who helps the bird find its way back home. And so in this demo, you're at the very end, you sing, and the turtle comes out.
Mm-hmm. That was very cool. You see the turtle kind of emerge from the water, and you just kind of want to pick it up and pet it, you know? It's a super cool experience.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people want to pet the turtle. Yeah. We actually had a little girl, when the turtle came out, she dropped the controllers, and she went over to go try to hug it.
But that's a testament, right, to kind of the immersive qualities of VR and what you're doing here, pulling you into another world that's still, though it's another world, it feels very familiar because it's not, you know, playing in this kind of crazy, you know, world where bullets are whizzing by you. It's kind of down, a little more down to earth, a little more connected to reality. Do you think this is a genre of games and experiences with VR, kind of getting people in tune with their emotional self, let's say, that's as yet unexplored and has the potential to be a lot more?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that excites us about working in VR is that I think a lot of people don't consider themselves gamers and don't consider games as being something that is necessarily for them. And I think with VR, you kind of have a chance to set the expectations in a whole new way and bring in a new audience.
All right, so the game is Luna, and that's by Phenomena. I want to say Phenomena, but you know that's Phenomena, like the you know the Muppets game, the Muppets song, Phenomena. Martin, when can we look forward to Luna kind of hitting people's hands and being able to play it themselves?
Probably sometime next spring.
Excellent. All right, look forward to that. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us. Thank you. I've been a lot of things here today at Oculus Connect, and I was just a super secret spy agent guy, kind of trapped in a car with a bomb, and it was a little scary. I'm here with Mark from Shell Games and the game I Expect You to Die, which is an obvious riff on James Bond.
Absolutely. The game was actually heavily inspired by James Bond, and we do a lot of parodies inside the game as well.
Have you had any sort of like official or unofficial interaction with the makers of James Bond along the way? Like, have they seen the name out there and been like, what's going on?
No, I wish, though. I certainly welcome them to come by to studio and come play the game would be awesome.
So tell me a little bit about the game mechanics of I Expect You to Die. Obviously, the level that I played has been available in some ways to some people out there. So it's not, you know, I wasn't the very first person to play this level, though I felt, you know, I felt just as special as everyone else did playing this, and I'm eager to see the rest of it. But explain a little bit about what makes the mechanics of I Expect You to Die a little different.
So I think to go back a little bit, the game was originally released on Oculus Share, which used to be a site developers could post the game and people could download for free. And so we had posted the demo level of I Expect You to Die, and we got a really great reception. And I think we had 30,000 downloads and were the number one downloaded game for, I don't know, like 8 months with the exception of a couple of days. So the game was originally designed for a mouse. And conceptually, we wanted to build a game because we knew we were kind of stationary, where you could feel totally awesome, even though you couldn't really move or do anything. Mm-hmm. And we were wondering what that might be like. And spies do this all the time. Like, they're, you know, tied up, hanging over like sharks, or they're going to be cut in half with a laser. Yeah. And generally, they still feel awesome, and they're using their wits to solve the problem. And so we really liked that concept. Some of our early prototypes involved, like, being stuck in a car, going to a car crusher, and again, hanging over like a pool of sharks. And we thought that was just a lot of fun. And so we also needed a way to interact with things because that was back before touch. So telekinesis was the way that even though I was kind of bound and couldn't move, I could still interact with my world.
So the way that you've designed this, obviously, I think touch, as with many of the games that we're looking at today, kind of take the immersion of virtual reality into kind of the next dimension. But you were telling me before we started talking about this here that the game works just as well. I mean, it was created with the mouse in mind. So really, you know, multiple different control mechanisms depending on how you're most comfortable, though I couldn't imagine playing it outside of touch.
No, absolutely. And I think the benefit is still supporting. We actually support the Xbox controller as well. And they're all very different. So touch is the most immersive. It's the most, it feels the most tactile. However, some gamers, like, they just want to kick back, put their feet up, and that's where the controller, the Xbox controller comes in. But I think even better than that is the mouse is such an easy thing that everyone understands. So, like, when my mom plays or people that aren't really gamers, the touch is kind of intimidating to them. But the mouse is such an easier entry level to do that they could still have fun and they don't struggle with the controls. So I'm certainly glad that we still support the mouse because it is good for people that aren't as technically savvy with games and with control mechanisms.
Well, and especially this is kind of, even though VR has been a buzzword for a very long time, I would consider 2016 to be the year where VR kind of took the next step to becoming a big deal. This has been a transformative year for VR. So you don't want to set that barrier of entry too high.
No.
You want to allow as many people to kind of get in and experience it.
When we do play tests and it's someone new or it's a client that, you know, doesn't work on hardcore games or stuff, yeah, like being able to just sit them in front and give them the mouse, they have a blast. Whereas sometimes if we give it to, and I don't want to pick on older people, I really don't, but we've had people like fall out of the chair and things like that. And just for safety reasons, sometimes it's good to use the mouse.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, when I was sitting there in the VR world, I'm sitting in the car, right? And I feel like I need to put my hands down. I realize, or no, this was when we were at the desk prior to the car level. And I wanted to put my hand on the table. Like, I was going to rest my hands on the table. Like, I'm tired of holding my hands up. I'm going to put them down. It was only at that moment that I realized I was in VR, and there was no actual table there for me to rest my hands on. It was my lap. So
a lot with the center console, yeah, where people lean over to go into the glove box, and that's how I've seen two people fall that way. And it's funny. It's a little scary, but it is kind of funny.
I'm not surprised at all. So what are some of the other scenarios that people can look forward to?
So we'll be shipping the game with four levels or four missions. We have this one, which is the car. It's our first mission. Our second mission, you pose as a window washer to infiltrate Dr. Zor's secret lab to see what he's working on and help neutralize. Well, I don't want to give away too much.
Yeah.
We have another level that we're not really talking about yet because we have to save something for people that buy the game later. And we have one where you go to Dr. Zor's private hunting lodge because he's working on something sketchy up there. And again, because it's a puzzle game, I really don't want to reveal too much, but they're all very self-contained missions that you just kind of go in, you get your mission, you figure out how to solve it, and then you go back. There is kind of a little bit of a higher level narrative for people that are into the story aspect, where we do talk a little bit about Dr. Zor and what he's doing and what some of his plans are, but a lot of it really is their self-contained missions.
So when can people get their hands on I Expect You to Die?
So we will be launching when Touch launches, which I think was just announced earlier today.
That's right.
And super exciting. And this event was my first time actually getting my hands on the Touch controllers. And, you know, I mean, it takes the whole thing to another level. It's kind of essential at this point, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right on. Thank you so much for talking with us, Mark, with Shell Games. I Expect You to Die, out in December. Thanks again, and best of luck.
Sure. Awesome. Thank you.
We've got a lot more to check out here at Oculus Connect. I'm having a lot of fun, but my eyes need a break. So let's thank the sponsor of this episode. This episode of TwitLive Special is brought to you by Braintree. By next year, maybe even next week, there could be a whole new way to pay. Maybe it's going to be the next Bitcoin, let's say, or maybe the next Apple Pay. Maybe both. Who knows? Fortunately, Braintree's full-stack payment platform is easily adaptable to whatever the future holds. So you can adapt easily, too. It makes it easier for you. Accept everything from pounds to PayPal to that next big innovation, whatever it happens to be, from any device with just one single simple integration. And when that new payment method comes along, all you'll have to do is update a few lines of code. That's really it. No late nights, no complicated recoding, no stress about staying ahead of the curve. Braintree Payments is here to help you out. Braintree gives you an easy way to accept multiple payment types with one integration. Integrating it into your app is as easy as inserting a few lines of code. I just wish everything was that easy. Learn more at BraintreePayments.com/twit. And now it's time for me to throw on some goggles and jump into another world. I don't know what I have in store for me, but if the past is any indication, I'm really looking forward to it. Let's jump into it. Seen a lot of really cool demos today. It just keeps coming and coming and coming and running into cool people. I've got Kyle Orland from Ars Technica standing here. How are you doing, Kyle?
Pretty good, thanks.
Excellent. It's great to talk with you here a little bit because we've seen a lot of really neat stuff. For me, I feel like VR is this, like, I have this outside fascination with it. I don't have VR at home, but after coming here, I feel like I kind of need to get in on it. What has impressed you the most about what you've seen here today?
If you want to get in on VR, it's a little cheaper now. I don't know if you heard at the keynote, they made Oculus Ready PCs that are now as low as $500, and another $600 for the headset, another $200 for the Oculus Touch controllers. It's still not an impulse buy, right, but it's better than, you know, the $1,600, $1,800 you had to pay before.
For sure.
It's quickly coming down, and, you know, in 5 years, as Michael Abrash was saying, who knows how cheap it's going to be for this level of tech. And when you pay $1,000, you're going to get something we've never seen before.
Yeah, absolutely. There was the discussion at the end of the keynote where it was like going into the future of VR. And I've just found myself throughout the course of that just saying, I want the future now. What we're seeing today is impressive, don't get me wrong. But that next level, that next stage is just mind-blowing.
And when you think about where we were 5 years ago, yeah, you know, VR was a thing like from the 90s that had totally failed. And now it's a real thing. There's thousands of people here playing real VR things. There's millions of people who have it at home. This is turning into an industry.
Yes, it is. And this has been largely the year that VR kind of woke, you know, people woke up to the idea of VR in their homes and realized it was, you know, possible to get what they thought VR might be all of these years, because it's not a new term by any stretch. What are some of the experiences that have really caught your attention since you've been here?
I really liked Lone Echo. It's a game where you're playing in a space station, it's zero gravity, and you use the touch controllers to grab on to surfaces, and you just kind of fling yourself,
yes,
like you're in a space station, like you're an astronaut. And you would think that would really be nauseating, like just having the world fly by you when you're really standing still. But there's something about moving your arms, I don't know, that really makes it feel totally natural, kind of like a skiing motion or something. They had this multiplayer demo of it where you have to grab a disc and you have to throw it down to the other end. You could grab other people and punch them in the face to stun them, and you have to turn around and use your jetpacks to get over there. And you're yelling at your teammates. It's 4-on-4 action. It's something out of Ender's Game, yeah. And it's a real thing that you can play right now. It's like the future.
Yeah, it really is fascinating. I actually just got done with that demo in the room. I think in our case it was 3-on-3, and I've always had a fascination with going into space and realizing what zero gravity feels like. That's the closest that I've ever come to, as far as I can tell, actually experiencing that. And I don't know how long it'll take for me to actually get to space to experience it. That's a really close second. I mean, there were moments in there where my brain was tricked. I was totally convinced.
When I came out of that experience, I was walking around the world, and I felt like I kind of wanted to grab onto things, yes, and just pull through, totally. Right? It's like when astronauts come home, I know that you don't give them the baby at first because you feel like you're going to drop it. And like, I felt like after just 15 minutes of that, I felt like, what is gravity? What is going on? This is not how the world should be. I want to be in the VR world. I want to be in zero G again.
Yep. So they showed off a couple of other interesting games from the stage that, of course, they're demoing here. What else have you checked out?
I really liked Super Hot VR. Mm-hmm. It's a adaptation of the game that came out earlier this year where it's a first-person shooter, but the world only moves when you move. So it's more like a puzzle game. The most trippy thing is when a bullet's coming at you, and as you're dodging, the bullet moves only as you move, and then you kind of see the bullet going by you, and that just blows my mind. And then there's another game, Robo Recall, where it's a similar thing where the bullets are coming at you, and you can actually grab them out of the air with the touch controller and just kind of fling them back at the enemies. There's a bullet train demo that Epic had that was a similar thing. They turned it into a full game. Another thing I liked about that is you fire your guns, and when you're out of ammo, you just drop them, pick up another one from your holster. It made me feel like a real action movie star. Just
absolutely
going over and over again, over the back.
Feel like the Terminator.
Totally.
That's what we all want. We all want to feel like the Terminator.
That's why VR is here, yeah.
Exactly. And then, of course, we had some good announcements from the stage. You know, we've been wondering up until now when people were going to get their hands on Oculus Touch, literally. Now we know, and this really seems to be kind of like the coming out party for Oculus Touch. What are the details there?
Yeah, December 6th, it's $199, which is kind of what we were expecting. So with the controllers, it's about the same price as the HTC Vive when you compare an apples to apples. You know, I really feel like Oculus Touch makes the platform what it could be. When Oculus Rift launched earlier this year, it was kind of like a big monitor, very big, best 3D monitor you've ever seen. You can see all the way around you when you look around. That's amazing. But then you got this old Xbox controller that you're controlling with. You can only play kind of old-fashioned style games. Now, the touch controller, I really like even better than the HTC Vive controller. You can open up your fingers. You can really grip things. The triggers are nice and spongy. You don't have to put a lot of pressure on them. And it really feels totally natural. You don't feel like you're gripping the controller with a death grip so you won't drop it. You can just move your wrists around and, you know, feel natural with it. That's really the one to beat.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree, and I'm not sure that I expected that coming into here. Just the fact that you can open, like there were certain game mechanics in I Expect You to Die, for example, where you have to extend your pointer finger in order to push buttons. You're not pushing a button actively on the controller to do that. You're actually extending your finger, and so it brings you more into the experience just in a real-world perspective and just helps with that immersion.
Yeah, and the controller knows that. It's not sensitive enough to differentiate between this and this, but you know, you can have like a trigger finger, and it, seeing your finger out there or giving a thumbs up to someone in multiplayer, that was my favorite part.
Yeah, right on.
Well, Kyle Orland with Ars Technica, really appreciate you taking some time out of your game playing, because I know you got to get back to it. You just did some Rock Band, and I'm sure that was fun. I'm gonna have to check that out. But thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you. Happy to do it.
All right, we're standing here in the halls of Oculus Connect, and I'm standing with Faviana, the CEO of Survive, the first game from your studio. Also, Daniel, who's the developer, one of the developers, I have to imagine. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Good. A little bit jet-lagged, but we've drank coffee.
Yeah, so where is your studio located?
In Stockholm, Sweden.
Okay, so you're a little bit behind. When did you guys land here?
Tuesday evening, it's like 9:30 p.m., so yeah.
All right. Well, I apologize. You've not totally and completely gotten over that jet lag aspect. But there's so much energy, so many people, you know, to connect with, to talk to about all of these efforts. So I imagine that probably lifts you up a little bit. Survive. This is why you're here. This is what you guys have been, you know, putting a lot of hard work, a lot of time into. Why don't you explain a little bit the idea, the concept behind Survive?
It's a funny story, actually. The idea came from in real life escape room. So you're put in an environment and you have probably specifically it was 1 hour and you have to get out. And that's when I thought, oh, wait a minute, escape room in VR, excellent. And we wanted to add storytelling as well, so to make it an actual, you know, story game. And we have a little bit inspiration from Myst, so the puzzle solving. So yeah, but it came from in real life escape room originally.
Excellent. And I imagine, I mean, as with everything that I've seen anyways, and a concept is great, but then a concept taken into this like real world environment of virtual reality, like it sounds like one of the key features of this gameplay would be kind of the claustrophobic nature of the fact that if you don't get out, your life is on the line. How do you execute on that? What are kind of some of the tricks that you use to really kind of get that across to the player?
What we want to play with is, so the one of the really great things with VR, there are many, yeah, is that you get to discover and be in so many different worlds. So when I say escape room, that was originally in Survive, you're actually you are in different kind of environments. And it could be outside, could be different planets. So in the beginning, it could be in a room on Earth, but then you are in an open world. So it's escape room, but it's also adventure mystery.
I like the comparison to kind of Myst style quality game as well. So from kind of on the developer side of things, what kind of a team do you have working on this? Because I know you're not just working for Oculus, for creating this for Oculus. You're doing kind of a multi-platform release on that. How many people does it take on your team to kind of pull that off?
Well, we are 8 in total. There are full-time devs. And right now we're sort of doing the basic prospect of it, of the game as a concept. We're doing it full-time on the Vive console because that's the hardware we had first. But we're also focusing on first and foremost Touch and later PlayStation VR as well. Mm-hmm. So running it out and getting, I mean, for Vive, that was the like original, yeah, we're doing room scale, but Touch, as we saw at the keynote now, they're going out to like, definitely, yes, we are, right, even though it's been sort of half-confirmed before. And as far as developers going on just the multi-platform support, using the gamer's name, we're using Unity, and the actual multi-platform support for that is pretty easy. We do need a few controller adjustments, yeah, depending on what kind of input the platform uses, sure, and some design decisions around that. But all in all, it's pretty much the same game.
Same graphics and all of that. So
yeah, excellent. I think what's interesting about the way VR is kind of maturing right now is you have three distinct viewpoints, at least on the kind of upper scale VR, right? Like the three that you've mentioned. You've got Oculus, and then now Oculus Touch, which we have a release date for, and that's exciting. You got HTC Vive, which kind of had the motion controller from the beginning, and then you've got, of course, PlayStation VR, which the veil is kind of lifted on that, and we can all expect that. And yeah, I played with that last night, and my mind, you know, I was blown away with Batman Arkham specifically, but really cool kind of. I know, exactly. You seem like you might be a big fan of that.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to play Arkham yet?
No, I haven't.
I promise you will be, like, giddy, because when you look in that mirror and you see Batman on the other side, like, it's transformative. But I think what's interesting is that they all kind of take this control mechanism to a different point. And today was my first time playing around with Oculus Touch. Mm-hmm. I'm super impressed with it. Like, I almost feel like it's the best of the kind of control mechanisms. What do you guys think?
I mean, ergonomics-wise, definitely. Bar none, it is, of the three, the best. hand controller, then it's all for the different companies and how each person, each consumer actually takes in the quote-unquote room scale approach of the each setup. So with Oculus today presenting the free camera setup as a viable option for the room scale. And yeah, actually just letting the consumer know or decide on how to actually approach that.
Is that a challenge from a development standpoint, like figuring out how you kind of map these controls and make them work on a game that's the same between all the different platforms but has a different control mechanism entirely?
I think it's a challenge, but we like challenges.
Yes, exactly. Challenge is not a bad thing. It lifts you up. Yes. It lifts you up. And you're going to be moving into kind of the Oculus Touch world. Right now, you were telling me before the interview that it's not quite Oculus Touch ready yet, but that's in the plans going forward.
Yeah. We have a demo on Steam for Vive, but as soon as we are wrapping up development on the first episode for Vive, we are... Well, final decision is still up, but yeah, it looks like Touch. It's very, very shortly after that.
Yeah. Fantastic. Awesome. So if people want to find out more about Survive, well, I mean, it sounds like you have a demo out there that people can actually get their hands on and play. Where can they find all the stuff that you have on this?
Well, it's on our website, survive.com, spelled S-V-R-V-I-V-E, or just look it up on Steam. Yep.
It's on Oculus stores.
Yep.
Coming soon.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. Coming soon. Love it. All right. Yes, exactly. Daniel and Fabiana from Survive, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Played a lot of games at this point. Man, it's been pretty transformative. Haven't seen a lot about immersive, let's say, storytelling. And that's what we're talking with Tom Sanaki from Limitless about. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm doing great.
So you have... a background, a pretty rich background, actually, with Pixar. And when I think of technology fused with engaging storytelling, Pixar is right at the top of the list. Tell us a little bit about kind of where you come from in that regard.
Yeah, I've spent my whole career at that intersection of art and technology. I started at Pixar at the beginning of Finding Nemo and got to work on building fundamental technology for characters and then actually building the characters themselves. So 11 years as a character lead at Pixar was a great opportunity because we got to discover the foundations of computer graphics and we got to build, you know, I got a chance to build characters like Mater, Kevin the Bird from Up, the Jellyfish from Nemo, and really find ways to make it easy and fun for other people to build those rich characters.
And I mean, that kind of background is, I have to imagine, gives you a leg up. It's certainly instrumental to what we're seeing right now with this emergence of VR as kind of a crazy platform to take not only just gaming, but storytelling to another level. Instead of just being a passive viewer, now you can be a part of the storytelling process. Tell us a little bit about kind of Gary the Goal, because this has kind of been something that has done really well for you and shown really well at events and all this kind of stuff. What was the technology that it took to bring Gary Goal to life?
So the Gary the Goal was fun because it's a blend of film and games. So after 11 years as character lead at Pixar, I was at Bungie working on Destiny for almost 4 years, from the end of pre-production through The Taken King. So I had the opportunity to learn what interactivity in games is like and what's working in a game engine, how is it different from film, and we were able to successfully take character techniques from film and put them into real-time game engines. So Gary the Goal came out of that, you know, because after catching the VR bug and starting a VR company, we ended up spending some time trying to figure out what the right thing is. We knew we wanted to do characters, but what's key about characters in VR? And after doing some tests, we came upon this idea that they should be interactive. And I talked to my friend Mark Walsh, who is an animation supervisor on Finding Nemo and Ratatouille with me, an old friend. He also a writer director and director Partisaurus Rex. He wanted to do something in VR and he wanted to do, coincidentally, interactive characters. So it's perfect. We decided to work together. He came up with this great script for an interactive short film called Gary the Gull. And in Gary the Gull, you're sitting in a beach, it's in VR, and it's amazing, it just looks beautiful, it sounds great, and you have your lunch in a cooler in front of you, and all of a sudden a bird lands and looks at you, a seagull, and starts talking to you. And just like in real life, if a seagull starts talking to you, you can talk back. So you can respond to his questions by talking or nodding or shaking your head. You don't have to answer because that's a valid thing in real life. And he might continue on or repeat the question. And, you know, if you throw something at him, he's going to jump off. All those rich social cues get expressed in VR in a way that gives a rich emotional connection with the character. You feel like you're a part of their story, just like they're a part of yours. And that creates a really amazing experience in VR because it touches on the thing we really care about in our entertainment. We care about characters. We care about connecting with their stories. And we care about people in real life. So Gator Girl is a great expression of that. It was the first project on our platform because we're building the fundamental technology for characters and interactivity in VR, both on the interactivity front and just on making the animation and characters easier in general.
So tell us a little bit about the platform then, because these are tools that, you know, that, I mean, not just people who have a background in Pixar can use, but I imagine these are tools for others to use to create immersive, interactive storytelling experiences. What sets your, what makes that happen on the platform level?
So our technology allows you to build an interactive story, and we make it easy. Because game engines have gotten way easier to use. Unreal, Unity are amazingly easy to use, but there's still some things there that are hard, particularly anything around characters. It's still it's not as easy as you'd like. So with this, our technology, we let a storyteller lay out a story very simply. What questions do you ask? What are the responses? What animation and dialogue plays? And do it in a way that avoids animation state machines, that avoids variable setting, and lets you lay it out really simply. Great for a professional to do who doesn't have a lot of technical knowledge. On top of that, we make it simple because we handle all the interruptions for you. If you have a traditional animation state machine, I have to check every time that I hit you, and then I have to go to the state where, okay, I got hit, and how do I get back, and what do I do? It gets super complicated, and squared networks all over the place. We cut that out entirely so you can set up the rules for how these interruptions happen without making it a part of your main story. And on top of that, the next stage after you have interactivity possible is you want to make interactivity easy to use. And the largest cost, the biggest hassle is animation. I can reuse a character from experience to at least prototype, but that animation has to be new. So just this week we announced VR animation in the VR creative environment where you can animate in VR. You know, using motion controls, you can pick up a character, animate them however you want. It takes 2 minutes to learn, not the month or more a full-time training animation does. And an animator can get a day's worth of work done in 30 minutes. So this is perfect for VR because we don't know what an amazing VR experience is yet. We have a lot of great experiences, but that one experience that we look at and say, this is what the medium was built for, you know, the Citizen Kane of VR, we're not there yet, and that's okay. We don't have to be. But the way to get there is to try out new ideas, and the faster we get there, the more we will be to try something super crazy that'll never work, like a camera cut in film, something that clearly would never work until you try it, and it does.
Right. So another thing that you announced, anyways, is that you're having some sort of a closed alpha for people to get in on your platform. Who's lucky enough, who's fortunate enough to get in on that, and when does it open up, do you think, for everybody to get involved?
So, we announced this week that we are opening up the VR animation part of our platform to a small group of studios in a closed alpha. We want to keep the group small because we want to really work closely with them and get the right feedback, make sure we're solving the right problems, and that we're not, and without you know, spreading our focus too thin. So we're going to work with them for a while and make sure we're building the right system, and then we'll be opening it up to a larger beta in the near future once we figure out what that feedback is. Our website, vrlimitlessltd.com, has a link there for where you can email to get more information about the closed alpha. We're looking for mid to large studios that are building compelling character-driven content that will really push the platform. And the thing we're excited about is because VR animation and interactivity are so easy to use even now, even though this is professional-facing software, we have the opportunity to go to a wider audience, a more consumer-facing audience, where an average consumer in their homes can build their own stories. Because we all know how to animate. We all know how to tell stories. We learned this when we were kids by playing with our toys. And we can't do that in a lot of content because the software gets in the way. You know, I didn't think I would be an artist because I couldn't draw. And I couldn't figure out the mechanisms. Nobody would teach me. And only until I discovered art with a computer was I able to find something that clicked for me. Sure. If we can remove the barrier of software to zero, who knows who will be a storyteller, just like people are building amazing environments in Minecraft who don't think of themselves as architects.
Right.
We can have amazing storytellers come out of the average consumers in the house, make stories, share them with their friends, share them with the world, build full content with it that you can, you know, that feels professional, and then, you know, the same environment for building content is available for professionals all the way down to everybody, and that's an amazing future that we're excited to be a part of.
So much right now of technology is around democratizing all these things that, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago, it was really inaccessible to so many people, and that's kind of what it sounds like what you have here. You're democratizing the ability to take, you know, a rich history and something as awesome as Pixar and translate that into engaging storytelling tools that anyone can use. And I'm really, really pumped about it.
Yeah, and I'm excited too. Like, I love how the iPhone is both a professional phone and it's the phone that you, the first phone you give a kid, you know, when it's time for them to get a phone. And we're excited about a future where, you know, the professional can learn animation in 2 minutes, because that's what we're seeing now. People can learn animation from scratch in 2 minutes using VR animation. And professionals are 16 times faster, getting a day's worth of work done in 30 minutes. But that's just the beginning. Imagine what it's going to be like when a consumer gets into it and they're learning in 2 minutes and they can build amazing stories and they get ideas because they're playing around in VR and it all feels natural. And then we can open up to everybody. You know, why do, you know, there's no innate barrier between a professional and a consumer. It's just about, once we remove the barrier of the software, then it's just about how much time you care, what your passion is, and how much, you know, and the stories that live deep inside of you.
Yep, absolutely.
Tom Sinaki from Limitless, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Best of luck.
Thank you.
All right, I can say for sure at this point my eyes are tired and my legs are kind of tired too, because we've walked all around this place looking at all the awesome experiences inside Oculus Rift, playing around with the Oculus Touch, which I have to say, through my time here with the Oculus Touch today, it might be my favorite motion controller for the different VR rigs that I've played with so far. We'll wait for the official release in December to really kind of make that claim. But right now, I'm totally digging it. If you want to catch other stuff that I'm doing on this network, you can find me at Tech News Today, of course. Also, All About Android and Android App Arena. And every once in a while, from time to time, I jump in and do some of these Twit Live specials. And you better believe I'm going to ask to do this one, Oculus Connect 3, next year for Oculus Connect 4. Really looking forward to it. All right, that's it, folks. I'm Jason Howell. We'll see you next time.